Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, our guest is Arnold August, author of Democracy in Cuba and the 97-98 elections.
It's quite frustrating for me as a person who, not only a friend of Cuba, but a person sort of who believes in, you know, that truth should be, have some value to it, that Cuba is being, you know, accused of, you know, being undemocratic, dictatorial, and all that. I visited various countries in the world, but if there is a country which has so much discussion, debate, conflicting views, pluralism in a healthy sense of the term, it's Cuba. If there's a country in the world in which you can say that the whole country is a parliament, it is Cuba.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Writer and political analyst Arnold August received his master's degree in political science at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. In addition to authoring Democracy in Cuba and the 97-98 elections, Arnold August operates an agency that provides cultural and reality tours to Cuba so that foreigners can get a first-hand experience of the situation in the island nation. Arnold August was interviewed by our Great Lakes region correspondent, David Apsey.
I'd like to start out by going into the history of the development of democracy in Cuba. Specifically, let's start with a term that I read in your book called Cubanía.
It is often said at this time, United States and elsewhere, that what is needed in Cuba is a democratization of Cuba. The democratization of Cuba began in the last third of the 19th century, when the Cuban people began to struggle to take their own destiny in their hands. Cubanía, in my view, is, in political terms, the expression of the Cuban people deciding in practical terms, in political terms, in ideological terms, that they are the Cuban nation, that they represent the Cuban people, that the Cuban people themselves are the ones who should shape the future of Cuba. And this was shown perhaps most dramatically in the last third of the 19th century, when the revolution broke out, led by the patriots of the time, who freed the slaves and organized an uprising, a very important uprising of the Cuban people in the eastern part of the country against Spanish domination. Even though it was very rudimentary, began to write their own constitution, began to elect people from amongst themselves to represent themselves in a constituent assembly, to establish as well their own army to defend the Cuban nation against Spanish colonialism. So in my view, Cubanía is often connected to cultural developments, but I think that Cubanía, as far as in political terms, is very important as well, because it was the political pinnacle of the Cuban people deciding that we are no longer going to be slaves or subjects of Spanish colonialism, that we want to be the masters of our country. It was said at the time in the 19th century that even by foreigners who were not Cuban but open-minded people, that Cubans were not even welcome in their own country. The last third of the 19th century was the time when the Cuban people rose up to say, no, we are masters of Cuba. The leaders of the Cuban Revolution in the 19th century were the people connected to Renaissance, to progressive ideas of Bolivar, José Martí, who said not only they wanted independence, but they also wanted a new social system where everyone would be equal. And the freeing of the slaves in Cuba was a very dramatic manifestation of this drive. So this struggle for a national and social emancipation actually was being won in the last, at the end of the 19th century, in 1898, when, in fact, United States stepped in and rob the Cuban people of that revolution after close to 30 years of war and many sacrifices. Cuba once again came under the domination of colonialism, but this time it was mainly neocolonialism of the United States. And one of the features which I studied quite closely was the type of political system which the new neocolonial regime established in Cuba in 1902, right through to the revolution in 1959. And having investigated and looked into the accusations against Cuba by various U.S. administrations, one of the things which has come out of these accusations is the notion that Cuba should adopt a multi-party system. In fact, if you look at the various laws against Cuba with regards to the blockade, such as the Helms-Burton Law, the Torricelli Law, all of the declarations of all of the U.S. presidents right from the 1960s, it boils down to the very basic point that we have a right, the United States has a right to impose the blockade against the Cuban people because there's no democracy in Cuba, that Cuba has to be democratized and all that. They have to come around to our model of the multi-party system. And in fact, the Cuban people, it's very ironic, those, you know, they want Cuba to adopt something that the Cuban people already have had experience with. They have had multi-system, multi-party democracy, so-called multi-party democracy, from 1902 right to the revolution. Now, how did it operate? It operated in the following way. The general economic power through that whole period of the 20th century was in the hands of a very small minority of American and Cuban millionaires, landowners, sugar refinery owners. And they ruled the roost by having different political representatives. They established different political parties with various political trends. Sometimes it was reformist, sometimes it was conservative, sometimes liberal, sometimes something else. One party would be in political power. When this party would become discredited, then the money of the capitalists and the landlords of Cuban, you know, of whether they would be Cuban or American, would put their money behind another political party or another political personality, and that person would come into power. That political party would come into power. Of course, this what I'm describing here would be very familiar to Americans and people living in other capitalist countries, because you know, this is the type of thing that happens right now in countries such as the United States and Canada. Well, it's a long story, but to put it into a nutshell, this thing was happening. These manipulation of different political parties and all that, and personalities by not only the wealthy minority Cuban American elite, but even the American mafia in the 1940s and 1950s installed themselves in Havana. So you had the American embassy in Havana. You had State Department envoys being sent to Havana regularly. You had the mafia, such as Lucky Luciano, Meyer Lansky, and all that, each having their own hotels in Havana. And they manipulated the different political parties, their political systems. And that was the electoral system, the multi-party system, as it existed in Cuba at that time. The multi-party system was, in fact, one of the causes of the revolution, in the sense that Cuban people rebelled against the multi-party system.
We're talking with Arnold August. He's author of the book Democracy in Cuba and the 1997-98 elections.
After the revolution took place, a very unique political process was established in Cuba. Did elections take place after the revolution in 1959? They did not take place. Why was this? Was it because the Cuban people were not democratic? They had no sentiment for democracy or for elections? I don't think this was the case. It is interesting to note that the Cuban people, under leadership of the new revolutionary government led by Fidel Castro, organized mass meetings all across the country in which millions of people participated, and in specific meetings you have up to 1 million people participating in Havana. What took place in these meetings? You had frank exchange, on the one hand, opinions, propositions, suggestions by the new revolutionary government, specifically Fidel Castro, to the people regarding the general orientation of the revolution. And discussion took place, and people actually voted with their hands. That's why in my book, if you've noticed, I have not only the front page on the cover itself, but in the book, photographs of people voting on definite decisions in 1959, 1960s. Amongst other things, peasants coming there in their millions all across, in specific cities all across the country, to ratify and support the land reform, which took the land out of the hands of a very small minority of a wealthy American and Cubans and put the land into the hands of the Cuban peasantry. And one of the interesting things that was discussed or presented at these mass meetings was the issue of elections itself. This is another one of the most ironic features of Cuban history in relationship to United States pressure against Cuba. Fidel Castro himself once suggested to the Cuban people in 1959, not too long after the culmination of the revolution, what about elections? Should we have elections? And according to reports in the American University database on Fidel Castro's speech, the reaction by the people was, no, we do not want elections. The Cuban people had experience with elections from 1902 to 1959, and this experience was completely negative. Elections meant the manipulation by the wealthy minority of different political parties, different political personalities, in order to maintain the economic and political domination over the Cuban people. As far as the speeches by Fidel Castro from 1959 to 1962, the short description of the reaction of the people to the speeches, what actually took place. I got that from a database established and developed by American universities, and the quotes that I use in my book regarding the reaction of the people, positive reaction of the people to proposals to Fidel Castro, comes from the database gathered by these American academics.
There is two sides to this democracy story in Cuba. There is the political side, and we've been discussing that pretty extensively up till now. And there is the economic side.
In 1959, the 60s, and early 1970s, there was no elections as such in Cuba. But the Cuban people, they've developed a political culture where they learn from their own experience. They do not copy from any other country. They base themselves on their own experience. And I think that is the foundation of Cubanía. It was born in the 19th century, but Fidel Castro and other leaders have inherited that Cubanía. And they work out their development based on the development of their own society. So they came to the conclusion in early 1970s, in order to improve the economy, increase production, it was important or crucial for the Cuban people, the Cuban working class, to get more further involved in the decision-making, the overall decision-making and the day-to-day decision-making. And so it was decided that it was necessary to have elections in order to have people, whether peasantry in the countryside or workers in the cities, to be represented on different levels of political structure. And so a new political system was worked out in 1976, in which elections were being held to the municipal assemblies. And since 1976, reforms have taken place in order to further develop this electoral system, to the point where in the later on in the 1980s and 1990s, it has developed into a very sophisticated political system, which includes not only elections, but side by side with elections, the same type of massive consultations based on the experience and tradition of 1959 and the 1960s. So you have sort of a two-track political system, in my view. You have that spirit that came out of the revolution in the 1950s, that you have revolutionary leadership meeting with people on a mass basis, as well as smaller, more compact meetings in the neighborhoods, in the places of work. And you also have the more formal electoral system. But even the electoral system was born out of the Cuban people's own experience. Of course, you had the positive influence internationally of the communist movement in the current period of the Renaissance before and all that, but in my view, based on my own experience and study, that the main feature of the political process, the electoral system in Cuba, is that it comes from its own experience. It comes from the last third of the 19th century, how José Martí, one of the main architects of Cuban democracy, thought about the issue of elected delegates and other features of democracy, including accountability, which is one of the cornerstones of the Cuban political system. And in order to prove my point, of course, you could have many arguments, but I would say if the Cuban political system was based on copying from other countries, then how come it still exists in year 2001? Because just about everything else has sort of vanished into thin air, unfortunately. But the Cuban system is still, it is not perfect. They have problems to solve, and the Cubans are the first one to admit that. But it exists, and it is very strong. So that proves, in my view, in a nutshell, that it's based on their own experience.
This is People's Tribune Radio, and our special guest today is Arnold August. He wrote a book, Democracy in Cuba in the 1997-98 Elections, and we're discussing his book today. And I'd like to go back a little bit to the economic democracy. How would a sugar mill or a factory be organized? How would the production be organized as opposed to the kind of production organization we would have here with bosses and deciding production quotas for the workers and imposing those quotas? How would the workers decide their own production structure?
Well, one of the main features of Cuban society, Cuban political system, is that the people are involved as much as possible in the day-to-day decision-making in order to reach economic political objectives. It is often said by the enemies of Cuba that Fidel Castro and other leaders are, you know, keeping a lid on Cuba, trying to prevent the Cuban people of taking things into their own hands. It is exactly the situation, exactly the opposite of what the Cuban people are accused of doing. The Communist Party of Cuba, its leadership, are the first ones to try to look for ways and means to increase the Cuban people's being sovereign in the sense of controlling their own destiny, making the decisions. In fact, in many occasions when the discussions were organized, for example, in 1992 around various issues, it was found by the leadership that the people weren't really fully discussing the issues. They didn't really give their point of view. They sort of were taking a passive stand, and discussion was stopped until things were reorganized to make sure that people really participate and wasn't just, you know, participation for appearance's sake. And so this is one of the struggles taking place in Cuba now, is that the necessity for the Cuban people to fully discuss the objectives in terms of production and all that. And the Cuban people know that in order to improve their economic situation, their economy, they have to have the people involved in the day-to-day discussions and also in the overall orientation of the revolution. That's why when measures are adopted in the Cuban National Assembly, they are often discussed in detail at the places of work. And until the pieces of legislation are actually adopted, it goes to the people in the places of work, in the neighborhoods, in the educational institutes. And with the changes which are being proposed are finally adopted in the legislation. So I would say Cuba is a parliament. You know, it's quite frustrating for me as a person who not only a friend of Cuba but person sort of who believes in that truth should have some value to it, that Cuba is being accused of being undemocratic, dictatorial, and all that. I visited various countries in the world, but if there is a country which has so much discussion, debate, conflicting views, pluralism in a healthy sense of the term, it's Cuba. If there's a country in the world in which you can say that the whole country is a parliament, it is Cuba.
Let's move on to the modern elections. One tidbit of information that I have heard, and I didn't read it in your book, but it may be in there, but about the children monitoring the elections, there is particular interest in that concept. So could you go through in a basic way how the people get elected and nominated up from their local areas and how they can get elected to higher bodies of government?
People are nominated in the following ways. The electoral wards, which themselves, each one is very small compared to the electoral wards which we know in North America. America. And these electoral wards, being composed of, the area would be around 4 by 2 blocks or 6 square blocks, very small, about a couple of thousand people. These areas are itself divided into small nomination areas in which you have about 150 voting citizens. These nomination areas, people are called, get together one evening in front of their house, and the Electoral Commission asks those citizens on an individual basis who they think they should nominate from amongst their neighbors to run for elections to the Municipal Assembly. And what is important to notice is that there is no party or any social or mass organization which does a nomination. On the contrary, when citizens propose someone to be nominated for elections, they speak on their own behalf as an individual citizens, and they propose people based on their integrity, what they have done in the community, and not the political or non-political affiliation of these people. And various nomination area meetings take place in which people freely nominate those who they think amongst their neighbors should run for elections in the Municipal Assembly. This takes place all across the country, and eventually in each Municipal Assembly, elections take place in which you have at least 2 people, maximum 8 people on the ballot box. They are secret ballot elections. Each individual citizen has a right to go in there. Either he could put in a blank ballot, he could spoil his ballot, or vote for one of the 2, 3, or 4 candidates that are found on the ballot. And of course, this is done secretly. This is the basic way in which elections take place. It also would be of interest to our listeners in many parts of the world that there, and very refreshing, I'm sure, to take note of the fact that in Cuba, there is no election campaigns which take place there. It's very calm. I was there when the elections took place in the fall of 1997, and I was living in the house of one of my colleagues who was someone who was running for elections at the time, and of course I was following the elections. If I was not following the elections consciously, I would not have known that elections take place. It's very calm. For example, how do the elections take place? The state provides for all of the citizens a biography and a photograph of each of the people nominated for elections. These are all of the same size, and they are posted publicly in the marketplace, in the schools, and other public buildings in order to provide an opportunity for the citizens in that area, you know, as they do their day-to-day work or shopping or going to school or whatever, to see who the candidates are, to familiarize themselves with these candidates, and when election day comes, to vote according to their own conscience. This is the elections take place in this way to the Municipal Assembly, and then based on that, elections take place to the higher bodies, the provincial and the national assemblies. It's a very complicated process. The best way to find out about it, I think, is to perhaps buy my book if people have an opportunity to do so. But just in a nutshell, I will tell the listeners that another nomination process takes place in which the people are nominated from amongst national municipal assembly delegates and from amongst known and unknown personalities in the political field, athletes, singers, scientists, etc., in order to form a national assembly in the real sense of the word, in the sense the national assembly as a mirror, an image of the Cuban nation. In Cuba, there are not 2 houses like a House of Representatives or a Senate. There is one house, there is one parliament, and it is organized to be a reflection of the whole Cuban nation. And so people are nominated by special nominating committees from different sectors of the society, and then elections finally take place as well, secret ballot elections for delegates to the National Assembly.
Let's go into the nomination process. There's many questions about this in the Western media. Does the Communist Party participate in the nomination process? And how is it that the children are involved in the election process monitoring?
Regarding the first question, my own investigation has shown that the Communist Party does not participate in the nomination of people to run for elections to any level of office in Cuba. It is the individual citizens who nominate based on their own experience. In order to assure that this is the way things are done in Cuba, my own experience and investigation has shown it's the Communist Party of Cuba which is in the forefront of making sure that it itself does not interfere in the electoral process and seeks ways to strengthen the sovereignty of the Cuban people in their own political process. Regarding the pioneers, the young people, this is very significant because in the so-called political process or multi-party democracy which existed in Cuba before 1959, the elections was an occasion for conflict, for violence, for fraud. And since the revolution, the Cuban people have developed an entirely new political culture based on honesty. This way, the way that this is shown is that the youth of 15, 16 years old, pioneers, are the only ones that are used to look at the ballot box to assist people in voting. And voting day in Cuba is a day in which everyone participates. It's a very calm day. And it's the use or the, you know, the fact that the pioneers are involved in that, it's also a manner in which the Cuban people have found to educate the youth, the young generation, about democracy and about the political process in Cuba.
Thank you very much. This is David Apsey for People's Tribune Radio. We've been interviewing Arnold August. He's the author of Democracy in Cuba and the 1997-98 elections.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.